3 a.m. Tales of Terror contains explicit content. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of 3 a.m. Tales of Terror. I'm Jamie.
And this is Kenny.
And I'm a really bad host because I put on Facebook and Instagram that there was going to be an episode this past Tuesday, and there was not.
You're not a bad host, you're just a liar.
Yeah, because what had happened was we went to my first metal concert on Sunday. We went to go see Killswitch Engage. And
KublaCon TX,
Fit for a King,
and Frozen Soul.
And I had Monday off work, and I slept all day because it was a standing room only concert, and I'm old.
You're not old, you're just weak. I stood in boots for 5.5 hours straight.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that bad.
And then before Killswitch Engage came on, I actually ended up sitting on the nasty ass floor because I couldn't take it anymore. So
gross.
Yeah, it was gross. So yeah, that's why I never ended up posting an episode, because I had Monday off, I slept all day, and then I had to go to work for the rest of the week. So get in your chair. Our supervisor is here. Okay. So this episode, we're doing Iceland, Indonesia, and Norway. We have two stories from Iceland. The Hofti House, Gunnvör. You're just going to have to bear with me on these names because I'm really not sure. Chuck Lagoon in Indonesia. And I don't know if it's Chuck or if it's like Chuk. Not sure. I'll probably end up just saying Chuck for name's sake. And then Akershus Castle/Fortress is in Norway. So this one might be a little bit of a shorter episode just because these are all like super short tales. But hey, also, you had a great day yesterday.
I don't want to talk about it.
But I have people who want to know how the door went. How did the barn door go?
It went. Building the door, solid.
Mm-hmm.
No time at all.
Yeah.
Then I found out, I don't know how the hell they framed my house. Because I'm not a smart man, but I know how to build stuff. And I know where studs should be located in a wall.
Mm-hmm.
There were none.
Yeah.
Could not find a single one above the door frame.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know why.
Three trips to Lowe's for
me. Yeah, three trips to Lowe's. Busted holes in sheetrock.
Yeah.
Because the anchors that came with it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
I put in better anchors.
Mm-hmm.
Which then exploded.
Yeah.
The sheetrock.
So if we ever sell this house, I hope nobody ever takes the barn door down.
You know what? I hope they do.
They have a lot of patchwork to do.
I hope they look at it and they're like, the hell happened here?
It looks so bad.
So then after busting all the holes in the wall, instead of patching the sheetrock and then going through with it, I just added a ledger board.
Mm-hmm.
And then screwed the door into the ledger board.
Yeah. It looks nice.
Works great.
Mm-hmm.
Works great.
At least it works now. Okay. So we're going to start out with Hofti House. I believe that's how you say it. Like I said, you're just going to have
to... No, the O's got a different pronunciation. Hold on.
Oh, okay. I didn't know you were Googling pronunciations.
Hofti House.
Hofti? Okay. Hofti House. Okay.
Just say it like you're saying H-O-V-I-D-I.
Hofti. Okay.
It's not the O, it's actually the D thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The Hofti building has a very remarkable history. In the 104 years since it was taken into use, there have been consuls, ambassadors, poets, and artists, among others, living there. Hofti is today the mayor's reception hall. Hofti House was taken into use in 1909 and has a remarkable history related to Icelanders' relations with other nations. Hofti House has original connections with France. In the 19th century and early 20th century, French fishermen frequented Icelandic fishing grounds. Mr. Bruin, the French consul, was sent to Reykjavik to assist them. He arranged to import a wooden house from Norway and have it set up in Reykjavik. The house was completed in 1909. There are several of these wooden catalog-style houses in Iceland, but Hovedi House is one of the most beautiful. And it really is a pretty house. It's like white and like very square. It looks really pretty. After Bruin, Einar Benediktsson, a poet and entrepreneur, lived here with his family. Benediktsson was also a government employee, and while serving as governor of a northeastern Icelandic province, he was called upon to investigate a case of brother-sister incest that resulted in a pregnancy with the subsequent murder of the baby. On the day she was interrogated, the sister poisoned herself and then died an agonizing death in Benediktsson's presence. After that, Benediktsson claimed to be haunted by her spirit, which he said followed him as he moved from post to post. He bought Hovedi House in 1914 and lived there during World War I, during which time he reported some disturbances to his friends. The longest residence was by the family of Dr. Matthias Einarsson. I haven't researched these in a long... I researched these so long ago, I forgot about that brother-sister incest case. That's... Ooh.
It's weird. I thought this was in Iceland, not Alabama.
Stop it.
That's funny.
You're dumb.
From 1938 until the end of the war, Hovedi was the seat of council and later the ambassador of Britain. The Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, Winston Churchill, and the singer and actress Marlene Dietrich visited the house during the war years. In the 1940s, Hovedi House served as the residence of the British ambassador to Iceland, who also reported incidences, which he gave as his reason for selling the house and moving into town. On October 11th to the 12th, 1986, the Hovedi House hosted a summit between the Cold War superpowers. Iceland was chosen as a location because the island represented a literal middle ground between Moscow and Washington. Neither giant would have to stretch too far toward the other. In the history of diplomacy, the Reykjavik summit stands apart. Not before and not since did the Cold War superpowers meet in such frank and open circumstances. Without talking points, without agendas, Gorbachev and Reagan sat together in the elegant but cramped Hovedi House, drawn together in the determination to enact massive nuclear weapons reductions, to exorcise forever the specter of nuclear war that had darkened the century. The house was later bought by the city of Reykjavik for use in official receptions. Members of the staff recall some incidences, such as paintings suddenly appearing askew on the walls and a bottle of wine that inexplicably fell out of a refrigerator when it was opened. However, the phenomena came to an end when, after many things had gone wrong at a banquet, a staff member appealed to the agent to stop. She subsequently appeared in a dream to the staff member and promised to end her harassment, after which the disturbances ceased.
I try to put, like, history in it, and I thought that it was cool that it was, like a middle ground for them like that. So that's why I put that little bit of information in there, because I thought that was cool, that it was, like, a middle meeting ground. Some Icelanders say that Hovedi is haunted, and there have been many reports of strange sounds heard in the night. The Icelandic Foreign Ministry has officially stated that they can neither confirm nor deny the existence of a ghost in Hovedi. But I'm pretty sure, like, when I was reading that Gorbachev and Reagan, they had also had, like, weird stuff that had happened when they were trying to do all their negotiations and stuff like that. But, and that what I put in here is, like, a paragraph compared to what actually went down at that whole meeting. Like, you can look it up, but it was too much for me to put in here because I'd probably just bore the crap out of everybody. But, like, if you don't care about it. But if you do, you can look it up and you can actually see what all they talked about and what they did and what they decided upon, because it was actually pretty cool and a pretty decent part of history. So I got all my information from Hovedi House, or for Hovedi House, from globalzero.org, Iceland Travel, occultworld.com and visit Reykjavik. So,
I think it's pronounced Gunnivor.
Gunnivor. Also, it's really funny that, you know, this is stuff, this is based in Reykjavik because that is where we were supposed to have our honeymoon. And we didn't end up going there because it got canceled.
So. Good old COVID.
Yeah. No, I don't even think it was COVID. It was the fact that people just didn't sign up for it.
Yeah, I'm right.
Huh?
Gunnivor.
Gunnivor?
Yeah, I was right.
Gunnivor. Okay.
Well, people weren't traveling because it was like peak COVID time.
Yeah, because it was 2022 is when we were supposed to go.
Yeah, which was peak COVID time for America. Yeah. So now we're going to talk about the Gunnivor. Mm. In Icelandic nature, everything has a name. Every mountain, every valley, every tussock, every rill. And behind each name is a story. The southern tip of the restless Reykjanes Peninsula is a spectacular place to visit. A highly active geothermal area of mud pools and steam vents boiling practically under your feet. If you dare to walk the wooden planks crisscrossing the area. Indeed, here is where you find the biggest mud pool in Iceland, Gunnivor, or the Guna Hot Springs. The Hot Springs deserves its name from one troublesome ghost, Guna. Just before dying, the said Guna had a brawl with the local sheriff, Wilhelm, who she hated. When she died, their discord had not been solved. Still, Wilhelm attended her funeral. The next day, he was found dead. His body bruised and blue, his bones broken. His remains were taken to the Uskalar Church, where the priest, Geisli, had to fight Guna the ghost throughout the night as she was determined to drag the sheriff to hell.
Yeah, she's crazy.
That hell has too many L's if we're going with Nordic hell.
Yeah. Guna the ghost did not get her way went absolutely bonkers. Wilhelm's widow suddenly died an unexplainable death. People traveling the peninsula got lost, died, or went mad. Everyone knew Guna was to blame. She refused to stay dead and was quite visible. Life on the Reykjanes Peninsula became unbearable. Until two farmers with some occult knowledge decided to get the priest at Vogasar, Eric, to bust the ghost. Knowing Eric would be reluctant, they decided to bribe him with quite a potent poteen, which he was known to like a tad too much. After listening to their plight, the priest gave the farmers a rope with a knot on one end. He told them to give the unknotted end to Guna. The knotted end would trundle and drag her to a place where she would get stuck forever. The farmers did as they were told, and the last sighting they had of Guna the ghost was when she tumbled into the hot spring. They declared her dead, the peninsula safe from her misdemeanors, and gave the hot spring her name so everyone would know where Guna met her end.
That's wild.
I know. It was a very, very short, like, story, but I thought it was cool. So I got that little story from hiticeland.com.
Some witchcraft, though.
I literally, like, I've had this story on my list to do forever, but it's so, like, to the point, I was just like, okay. I'll get to it eventually, but it is pretty creepy. Like, but hey, at least they got rid of her. They had like their own little way to get rid of her. So,
yeah, it's just interesting with the knot and the rope.
Yeah,
I've never heard that one.
Yeah. So next is did you look up how to say this? Is it Chuck?
It's probably Chuck.
I have looked this up, like how to say it, but I can't remember.
Yeah, when you type it in, Google wants to look up Chuck Norris. Truck? It's pronounced truck. That's what Google says. It's okay. The truck lagoon. Thanks. Well, we're going to talk about the truck lagoon. It's T-R-U-K is what Google says.
Okay, that's weird because it's spelled C-H-U-U-C-K or C-H-U-U-K.
Or Truk, the Truk lagoon.
Truk, maybe it is Truk, like that.
Well, nonetheless, I'm wrong and piss somebody off. So yeah, whatever. Right. Every year, thousands of divers flock to a remote area of the Central Pacific known as the Truk Lagoon. Situated in the midst of Micronesia, the lagoon is home to the world's largest ghost fleet, and as such has earned its reputation as the single best wreck diving destination on the planet. Here, divers can literally immerse themselves in history and become first-hand witnesses to the destruction of World War II. Because of this, diving Truk Lagoon's Ghost Fleet can be an emotional experience, particularly if divers familiarize themselves with the history before discovering it for the first time. During World War II, the Japanese used Truk Lagoon, then known as Truk Lagoon.
So it's spelled differently, so it has two different spellings.
So it's Chook and Truk.
That's probably what it is.
So during World War II, the Japanese used Truk Lagoon, then known as Truk Lagoon, as their main base of operations in the South Pacific Theater, as its sheltered waters provided safe anchorage for the Imperial Japanese Navy's combined fleet.
So, okay. So I guess it was just like a language barrier thing. Like,
well, they probably changed it after World War II.
Yeah.
The Americans are known to do that.
Yeah. Often referred to as the Japanese equivalent of Pearl Harbor, Truk Lagoon was one of Japan's most important logistical and operational hubs. It was also the only major Japanese airbase within range of the Marshall Islands, which were the easternmost point of the defensive barrier that Japan set up to protect itself at the beginning of the war. In early 1944, however, Japan suffered a major blow when the United States launched its Gilbert and Marshall Islands campaign and took control of several important Marshall Island atolls. After successfully capturing Kwajalein Atoll to the southeast of the archipelago, the Americans planned to invade Eniwetok Atoll, now called Eniwetok Atoll, which would provide them with the perfect base for launching an attack on the Japanese in the Mariana Islands. Before embarking on the Battle of Eniwetok, however, the Vice Admiral of the U.S. Navy knew that he would have to preempt a counterattack from the Japanese forces anchored at nearby Truk Lagoon, and so Operation Hailstone was born.
Oh, this is Operation Hailstone? Hailstone? Yeah, yes. I know this one.
Oh, okay.
I know that name. I didn't know.
Oh, yeah. I don't know.
The Pacific Theater is a little bit out of my realm. Mm. The creation of Truk Lagoon's Ghost Fleet. The Americans hoped to wipe out the Japanese Imperial Fleet by combining airstrikes, surface ship attacks, and submarine attacks to deadly effect. A week before Operation Hailstone was due to launch, however, the Japanese moved many of their larger ships to Palau, correctly fearing that Truk Lagoon had been compromised since the American invasion of the Marshall Islands. However, the vast majority of their fleet remained at anchor in the lagoon, and when Operation Hailstone struck on February 16, 1944, their former safe haven swiftly became a death trap. The campaign lasted for 2 days, and even those ships that managed to escape the lagoon eventually succumbed to a cruiser fire or submarine attack. When Operation Hailstone concluded, the Japanese fleet had lost 16 warships, including light cruisers, destroyers, submarine tenders, and an aircraft transport vessel. In the attack, 32 merchant ships also sank, and more than 250 Japanese aircraft were destroyed. Many of these ships were loaded with reinforcements and supplies destined for Japanese strongholds throughout the Pacific. The vast majority of crew and cargo went down with their vessels, and as such, the lagoon acts as their final resting place for many Japanese sailors, as well as their ships.
Mm-hmm. Operation Hailstone successfully decimated the base at Truk and proved to be a major turning point in World War II. Without the support of the Truk fleet, the U.S. captured Eniwetok Atoll shortly after the conclusion of the campaign. It would be just one of a long list of Pacific islands invaded by Allied forces in the last year of the war, including Guam, Palau, and Iwo Jima. Truk remained isolated until Japan finally surrendered in August of 1945. Nowadays, Truk Lagoon's Ghost Fleet has experienced something of a resurrection. Vessels that once waged war have become sanctuaries of life. Those divers who visit the wrecks can gain a valuable insight into the past, as many of them still display the cargo that they went down with. The paraphernalia of war is everywhere in Truk Lagoon, from the vessels themselves to the torpedoes, tanks, engines, gas masks, and more that litter their decks. To see these things firsthand is an overwhelming experience, one that highlights the horror of human conflict, while also providing some fascinating, rewarding diving. Keep in mind that many of the wrecks lie below recreational limits, although there's plenty to see on the upper decks as well. So this one wasn't really
So we can just go free dive and get some World War II stuff?
Mm-hmm.
That'd be all right.
This one didn't really have like a lot of ghosts, but I guess like the ghost part of it is the people that went down with their ships and stuff like that, everybody who died. I guess it's just an eerie place to be. That's my assumption.
I mean, I don't know why they're so upset they lost all those airplanes. That's what the Japanese do anyway.
God. I got my information for Chook Lagoon at scubadiverlife.com. So.
Do you think they'd be offended if somebody yelled bonsai and then dived into the lagoon?
Bonsai. Why?
Because that's what Japanese pilots would yell before they dive bombed into.
God, I'm sure you'd probably offend somebody.
I mean, I'm going to offend somebody anyway.
You always offend somebody.
That's what I'm here for.
Mm.
I'm just a walking HR violation.
Great. Can't wait.
Hey, I've only had to do sensitivity training once in my life. Thank you very much.
I thought you had to do it twice.
No, I almost had to do it twice.
Okay.
I got out of it the second time.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see how to pronounce this. Stand by.
I think it's Akershish. Yeah, it's just Akershish.
Akershish.
Yeah. So we've gone from Iceland to Indonesia, and now we're moving to Norway for our last little story.
Which is about the Akershish.
Akershish. Yeah, Sean Connery.
Akershish.
Akershish.
The Akershish Castle. The Akershish Castle. You can't say it seriously now.
That's why I said it's just Akershish.
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 I just sound like Sean Connery.
I
sound like Sean Connery. The Akershish Castle is a medieval castle. Oh, I will read this entire thing.
Please don't.
The Akershish Castle is a medieval castle originally built to house Norway's royal family in Oslo. Construction finished in 1299, and the castle saw its first battle in 1308. When it was besieged by a Swedish duke. Since its construction, Akershish Castle has housed prisoners. The prison was known locally as the Slavery because the prisoners were often rented out for work in the city. During the Second World War, the castle was briefly occupied by German forces when it surrendered without combat in 1940. Prisoners of war were executed in the castle by Nazis. After the war, 8 Norwegian traitors were tried for war crimes and executed in the castle. The castle has since been used as a military base and is now open to the public as a museum. Part of the castle is still closed off today, however, as it also housed the headquarters of Norway's Ministry of Defense. The royal mausoleum containing the bodies of several deceased Norwegian monarchs can still be found inside. A portion of Akershish Castle has been replicated as part of the Norway Pavilion in Epcot at the Walt Disney World Resort.
In Florida. Not California. In Florida. That's cool. I didn't know that. That's a lot of bodies to be dropped, like, at a singular place.
Well, in World War II, Norway didn't fight Germany. They just said...
No.
They pulled a France.
Yeah.
Except for they didn't cry about it when they were invaded.
Stop. My God.
They were like, hey, we can't do this. So y'all just go and do your thing. And they just lived it. And they were cool.
Oh.
It wasn't like France where it was like, hey, Nazis are coming in a month. Prepare. And they're like, okay. And they put their hands up as soon as they walked in and they went, we're invaded.
I didn't know any of that. I barely passed history. So, like, each time.
What is wrong with
you? I barely passed history.
Because that's how I found out that my history teacher was French. Because I walked up and I was like, hey, do you know how to do a French handshake? And he said, no. And I put my hand out and I went.
Oh, stop.
You just raise your arms like you're surrendering.
Stop.
He did not find that as funny as I did.
Oh, no.
He's like, you know I'm French, right? And I'm like, I do now.
No.
Whoops.
Whoopsies. See, this is why you need sensitivity training.
That'd be like that.
Okay, so the ghost of Akershish Castle. Akershish Castle is considered one of the most haunted buildings in Norway. Staff often hear whispering from the corridors and feel strange forces pushing them around. Visitors tell tales of screams and rattling chains echoing down the corridors at night. Two ghosts are particularly famous. Malcanison, meaning the vicious dog, is the spirit of a dog buried by the castle gate. It was thought that burying a live dog at the entrance of a building would provide protection in the form of a spirit. Mm-hmm. The same theory was often used in English graveyards, leading to the legend of black dogs. The soldiers guarding the entrance were terrified every time the ghost appeared. Visitors often see a black canine-like shape leaping at them, only for it to disappear before it lands on top of them. Supposedly, if you come into contact with a dog, you will die a painful death within 3 months. That's weird. And that's, I didn't know that.
Chasing that black dog.
I didn't know about that. There's in Valley Crucis, North Carolina, there is a road. I don't know the name of the road. I just know it's in Valley Crucis, which Valley Crucis is like the smallest town. And if you go up this like winding road at night, which I've done because I lived out in Banner Elk, and it's not true, but hey, I mean, I didn't see anything. But if you go up the winding Valley Crucis Road, you're supposed to see like a black dog, like a big, huge black dog supposed to come out and like chase your car and stuff like that. And it didn't happen to me, but there's a legend about that there. So I didn't know that. About like I didn't know where it came from.
I always thought the black dog is what truckers see when they were on a cocaine high.
Oh my god. Well, maybe that's why I didn't see anything, because I didn't do cocaine.
Same.
The other famous ghost of Akershus Castle is Mantelgeisten. This is the apparition of a woman often seen running back into her chambers. She has no face and emerges from the darkness wearing a full length robe. That's terrifying in and of itself.
What's crazy about the... I didn't know that the English had that same thing. But Norwegians, well, mm-hmm. Vikings, also believed that anything that you buried, you could spend in Valhalla in your next life.
So they buried all their money, didn't they?
All their gold and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But therein lies the problem. You would have some earls or kings or whatever that would say, well, this needs to be protected. So they would take young boys, about the age of 13 or 14, about fighting age.
Oh, God.
And bury them alive with their treasure.
Good Lord.
So that their spirit could protect their treasure so that they could spend it in Odin's Hall.
That is wild.
Didn't know about the dog, though.
Yeah, I didn't know
but
about the dog.
But now it translates. Translates perfectly. I'm like, okay, that makes sense.
And cool. I didn't know that the dog was, like, it came from that. Like whole thing, because that's cool. And I just thought it was cool that I also know that about Valley Crucis. So okay, so I got my information about Akershus Castle from writingwerewolf.wordpress.com. it's just a blog. So that is your little short quick hitting stories from Iceland, Indonesia and Norway. And I guess we've probably all learned something new this episode. Other than the fact that you guys always learn something new, hopefully. We did. I did. For sure. So.
That's because you're dumb.
Look at the toes. Look at the toes.
Toe beans.
Oh, he is sleeping. Okay. So. Other than that, I will post pictures on Instagram, and which will then post to Facebook. You can contact us through Instagram and Facebook, and also 3amtalesofterror@gmail.com. Those are the ways you can contact us currently, is Facebook, Instagram, and that email. And other than that, I guess we'll see you next time. Bye.
Later.